Okay, hello everyone. My name is Madeline Key. I am one of the leaders of Inventors Groups of America. We are so thrilled you have showed up and are spending your next hour to 2 hours with us. IGA, Inventors Groups of America, was co-founded by Stephen Key and Andrew Krauss, two leaders of the independent inventing community in 2017. To give back to the community, to provide a platform for us to gather and learn from one another. Today, we have a phenomenal presentation by none other than Courtney. Sorry, I got distracted by Scott saying, can't hear you. Can everyone hear me? I guess this, okay, great. Just wanted to be sure there. We have a fantastic presentation by Courtney Laskovich. She is an InventRight coach and serial inventor. I think many of you know her. She was the managing director of IGA for a number of years and poured her heart and soul into growing this community. Today, she's going to talk to us about identity, the ways that we think about ourselves, who we think we are, what we think we're capable of, really dictate more than we realize. She is going to take us from dreamer to doer. And Courtney is the right person to do this because she is an award-winning entrepreneur, a successful inventor who has licensed many ideas, and she's coached a ton of people to be more successful at inventing and product development. She knows what's going on inside of your heads, and she knows how to create the transformation we all want to see in ourselves. So Courtney, feel free to share more about yourself. There's a lot more we could say. And everyone, if you didn't notice, we are recording. So this is going to be added to YouTube. Please don't disclose anything that's proprietary or that you wouldn't want to be public. But that said, we really welcome your feedback and invite you to leave questions and tell us where you're from. One of the coolest parts about IGA is we have people tuning in from all over the world. And that's really something we like to see. So Courtney, without further ado, I think you should take it away.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Maddie. Greatly appreciate it. And hello, everyone here. I'm super stoked to be here and present my identity presentation for you guys. Let me go ahead and bring up my presentation and we can go ahead and get started. Okay, can you guys all see my screen here? Awesome, excellent. Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Hello, everyone. We are going to be talking about overcoming the number one thing holding you back, essential mindset changes for getting a licensing deal. As Maddie said, I've been an InventRight coach. I am a serial inventor. I've got 6 licensed products on the market. I am the host of my own podcast, the Serial Inventing Podcast. I recently started a comic strip as well that can be found on my podcast. And I've won a couple of awards, some for my products and some for past endeavors that I've done for speaking events. Okay, so I just wanted to really briefly talk a little bit about where all this information is coming from. I, as an individual, am really data and analytics driven. Most of the decisions I make in my life are through analytics. And so when I started finding out lots of different problems for my students, lots of them based on lack of motivation and lack of movement based on other things that they're doing in their life, it became a little bit frustrating for me as a coach. I struggled a lot to hear the same problems again and again. And a lot of them really did stem from us getting in the way of ourselves. It has nothing to do with the sell sheet, nothing to do with the industry in and of itself, nothing to do with the virtual prototype, the market research, the type of company you're pitching to, the industry, not the way that they are responding back to. You know, the particular scripts that we use, or waiting for them, you know, being ghosted. A lot of it really stems from us and who we are as an individual and nothing to do with our actual industry, which took one, I will say, a little bit of time for me to understand that that was the case, because it's very easy to blame others for our own problems. But that is not the case. It's very rarely the actual industry, but actually us that we need to learn a little bit about ourselves and figure out what the biggest concerns are that we're struggling with and solve those first before we get deeper into other problems that we have in the industry, such as being ghosted, people not responding back, and so on and so forth. This presentation is from about 3 years of research that I've done so far. And a lot of it is from, I'd say most of it is from those who have a ton of experiential knowledge in business with a lot of successes and, more importantly, a lot of failures. These are those who have businesses who really spent a lot of time understanding their customers. And I mean a lot of time understanding their customers. And they also spend a lot of time trying to be more efficient in their businesses and them valuing their time and their efforts far more than the money that they do or do not have. A lot of this information was taken through a couple of people that I'm a big fan of, including organizational psychology, the field in and of itself, essentialism, not to be confused with existentialism, and essentialism, and also confused with minimalism, which is very different as well. There's a very quick definition of it there. And then a bit of philosophy in this as well. I have had, I'd say for the last month or so, I've had a couple of students reach out to me, especially those who saw my game contest I entered and am currently a semifinalist in. I had people ask, I don't understand how you have so much time. Like, as Stephen liked to say, and many other people, that you all only have 24 hours in a day. So what is going on? Like, am I adding, you know, time out of thin air? No. And I'm exposing all of my secrets today. Again, there's nothing that is going to be held back here. Everything that is in this presentation is what I have learned and what I consistently do. I do all of these things constantly. And so this is answering that question of how do I find the time to do the things I really, really love? And a lot of it really comes down to optimization. So we're going to get into that right now. A little bit interactive today, so you can see if something is in purple. I want you to go ahead and write it down. If you do not have a notepad right now, I definitely recommend taking one out, and I would not recommend writing it down on your phone. We are talking old school pen or pencil and paper. We're going to fire some neurons a little bit stronger by doing that, so I'd really recommend that you do get paper of sorts and a pen, and anything in purple that you see in this presentation, please go ahead and write down on your paper. Also, anything in orange, I want you guys to go ahead and place in the chat. You can also write your answer down as well if you want to, but I'd love to pull the audience as we're moving forward here. Okay, let's get started. Identity. Who the heck are we? This is a very, very important question that we are going to start now and we are going to finish later. What really matters is, yes, how other people perceive you, which is a good indication of what you're putting outward, which we'll talk about in a second, but also how you view yourself. So that is going to come down to you guys answering the question. And here's our very first purple. What you spend your time on is who you become. What do you spend most of your time doing each week thinking about? I want you guys to go ahead and label yourself in tangible terms. Once you're done writing down that purple section, I want you guys to go ahead and place in the chat the most important, biggest, quickest things that you can think of right now of how would you describe yourself? We are not talking intangible, so we're not saying like we're trustworthy, hardworking, kind. We're talking about labeling ourselves. What are the first things that come to mind? And go ahead and throw it into the chat right now so I can take a look, and we'll use that throughout this presentation here. Those are some examples. Some of them are job descriptions, like who you are in your job, where you spend a lot of your time, probably 8-9 hours, you know, a day for most of the week. So feel free to put down your job title. Also, you can also talk about like who you are individually aside from your work, like you're a mom, a husband, etc. Excellent. We've got some good responses here. Overbooked, worked. Okay, we got nurse, wife, friend, sister, patent illustrator, spider dad. Wow, these are quite unique here. Truck driver, excellent. Okay, so we've got a couple of things here instantly on, keep going, feel free to add them in. This is great. Anything that you write down here in the chat of your current identity, of how you would label yourself, go ahead and remember what you wrote down. So feel free to, you know, write it down as well on a paper. You guys are gonna be answering lots of questions here. So now that you guys have written that down, we will come back to that and start changing our identity. But first, we're going to do a little bit of education and history, and how did we actually get here? So I'm going to start here with a Zig Ziglar quote. Your input determines your outlook. Your outlook determines your output, and your output determines your future. I would definitely go ahead and write down this formula. We'll be coming back to this formula as well. Input, outlook, outcome, future. The great thing about this formula is you only need to remember the very first thing, because everything comes after it, as long as you make sure you understand exactly what is being input. Then everything will flow smoothly, especially if you make sure that input really is in line with your future. Here are some quick examples of an input: a negative work environment that you work in. Maybe your family not supporting your dreams. Maybe you're watching a lot of TV to relax at the end of the day, taking your work back home and having it infiltrate your home life, doing something you don't enjoy for long periods of time. And then you've got outlook as well. You guys can take a look at that as what happens through that input. You may not care much about the integrity of the output of your work if you have a negative work environment, feeling discouraged, etc. And then an example of output slash future through these inputs and outlooks is that you lose your job, you lose interest in a project, you don't get anything done, you always feel you lack time, you feel stuck, you won't continue your projects, you don't have a work-life balance. These are all things that we really do not want to be in, yet often they happen and we wonder, how the heck do we get here? So what's really important here is we need to start understanding and noticing this thought pattern, and it all starts with that very first aspect of an input. Some inputs are shaped by external factors and others are shaped by internal. You can see here an example of this formula here, input, outlook, future. You've got negative work environment, not caring about the integrity of the output of your work, therefore losing your job. That is more external because it's a negative work environment that hopefully you're not contributing to. Then you've got shaped by internal. You feel like you won't succeed on whatever project you want to product license. You have no idea how to do it. So you feel like you don't have the knowledge. You're not sure what you're doing. So I don't know. I'm probably not going to succeed. You can have often negative self-talk, lack of confidence. And just from that one thought, shaped by yourself internally, you may not try. Why? I'm probably going to fail anyways. I don't know what I'm doing. Maybe I'll start it, you know, next year. That next year becomes never. You won't try. You won't start. It will never happen. Now, there's an example that I would love for you guys to, as we're going through these, to try to come up with your own right here. So here's an example, and I want you guys to go ahead and write down input, outlook, future, and see if you can fill those in yourself on one example of your life. This being one of them, I work a lot of hours at myself. Sales rep job, and I don't enjoy it. Okay. Well, if that's the case, you're spending a lot of hours in that job. I never have time outside of my work to do anything. Therefore, I never get anything else done. This is sadly really, really common for my students at InventRight. A lot of people don't like their job. They're working lots of hours to make ends meet, often for survival means. And therefore, they come to the calls and they say, I just don't have time. I just can't get it done. And we're going to dissect that a little bit more on this presentation of priorities and how that can really be a big pitfall for ever getting anything done, whether it's in this industry or just projects that you say you're passionate about, yet you don't actually make the changes in your life to make sure that that passion truly shines through and you do actually move forward with things you're passionate about. This is a book that I really recommend called Your Mind the Magician. And here's a good example of where you're putting your energy on the right with this hose. This is a good example of what happens, especially when you do not know that water, your creative energy, your time, your effort, all of that is constantly flowing. But if you're not pointing it anywhere, you're not going to get anything done with it. Where are you pointing that hose? And a lot of people don't know that you actually have a hose that's constantly pouring water. Are you pouring water on the ground? Are you aiming it at a plant? Do you even know that you're wasting a ton of water right now? A lot of this starts with awareness before we can even solve the problem. And this is the beginning of that awareness aspect. Understanding your input is the number one most important thing you can do to go ahead and change your identity. This book, I love it. Here's a quick quote from it. Moving to any new place in life literally involves deliberately putting oneself out of balance in the direction of the intended destination, and then trusting your creative mechanism to create the necessary points of support. a quick story here, I will say, I do a lot of MMA, jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai. I'm into martial arts. And there's an instructor story that I'm aware of from my partner, Mike. And he had an instructor for teaching Muay Thai. And at the time, he said, to be able to have a really good hook, what you need to do is you have to lean into it. You actually have to choose to put yourself off balance and catch yourself at the combination. So if you do not have a combination, a hook and then something else, you will fall. And so you want that next step to catch you. And that's a real good example of what's going on here. Okay, now we're going to get a little bit more into the nitty-gritty here. Have we settled? We're going to talk about mediocrity. I actually wrote a paper on this in high school. It's a funny story because we had to write a paper about a topic we were passionate about. This was my junior year. And I said, I want to write a paper about mediocrity. And my teacher was like, what? There's not information out there on mediocrity. What does that even mean? Like people being mediocre in their life? Like, I don't understand. I don't think you'll be able to come up with enough information to write the paper. And I let her know that there's lots of information on this topic out there. And I would love to be able to talk about it if it would be okay. And she said, sure. And I wrote a 7-page paper on mediocrity and the power of it. And that actually kickstarted my love of soft skills and getting more into psychology and philosophy myself, which we're talking about here today. So with that said, before we get deeper into mediocrity, I want you guys to go ahead and answer this question in the chat right now. Would you do your current job that you are being paid for 8, 9, 10 hours a day for most of your week, most of your time? Would you do that current paid job for free? I want to see in the chat here, is this a yes? Do you love this? Is this a no? Let me get like a good feel from you guys that if you enjoy your job enough that if it was offered to you, you would absolutely do this free. And we're talking about your current job. We are not talking about product licensing. Okay, we've got some no's. We've got a couple of yeses. Part of it, yes. We've got some no ways. We've got some caps of no's. We've got some long no's. I've got a couple yeses. No way. Great. Okay, so we've got a good feel here for the audience. And I would also sit with that. Again, we're talking about awareness here. How does that sit? If those of you who said no in any capacity, I would really delve into that. Why would you not do that for free? You don't have to go ahead and let us know in the chat why. And feel free to if you're willing to. But I'd really think about that. Why would you not do your job for free if you're spending so much time doing it? Why wouldn't you do it for free? And I want to have a raise your hand here. And Maddie, maybe you can help me out so I can see the audience a little bit better. I want everyone to go ahead and raise your hand if these bullet points are you. Raise your hand if right out of high school, you got a job just to make some money that most likely was not in your area of interest. Oh, you're muted, Maddie.
I'm seeing some hands, kind of a mix, not uniform across the board by any means.
Okay. And then raise your hand if you left that job and took another job and you've been at that job for quite a while. So you might have gone into a couple different professions and you're continuing to do that job. And maybe at this point as well, you have settled in a job that pays the bills. It doesn't necessarily get you ahead, so you can spend more time doing other things that you do enjoy, and you're currently still in that job that just truly isn't your passion.
I'm seeing some hands.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So I hear this a lot in InventRight, and maybe that's because other people are looking for other forms of passive income so they can, you know, get away from that 9-to-5 grind. And I would love for you guys to go ahead and write this down. Where you spend your time is a decision that you make every single day, every week, every month, every year, every second. Where you spend your time is a decision that you're making. Now, a lot of people feel at the get-go that like, I'm just so busy. Like all my time is carved for it. It's all cut out for, like, I don't have time to do any of this. And the way that people are talking about it is almost like time in life is happening to you, that you do not have this level of control in your life, that it's escaping you. You cannot control it. It's just happening, and this is where you are in life, and you just have to handle it. But this is a decision you are making every single day. It's really important to remember that, to gain back that control, because without that, you really are, I hate to say it, but you're playing that victim mentality, that life is happening to you, that you cannot control your time, but you can control it. You just have to remember that you are making these decisions every single day you go into work. You are making the decision to drive that car, to do that job. And with that said, we really want to get into talking about how to change this identity for those of you who wrote down in the chat, who you put down what you are currently, how you perceive yourself, and maybe what you might want to start moving towards. At the end of the day, actions, per usual, speak far louder than words. Words are very, very cheap. And so we can talk about it all we want, but if we don't actually make improvements and changes in our lives, then at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what we say. What matters is what we do. We have to prove it to ourselves to make things happen. I would be also very curious to see how many people get licensing deals for those who truly make a lifestyle change. I'd be very curious to see the percentage of people who get licensing deals and the percentage of people who actually make a lifestyle change to spend more and more time focusing on pitching and doing the work needed to be successful. I wonder if those percentages are similar. Because making a lifestyle change is really, really difficult, especially when you don't have a path to move forward with. We're going to talk a little bit about if we're going to be changing your identity first or your behavior first to make sure that everything is succinct and the path that we want to move forward with is actually true. We actually can move forward. There's a lot of blockages. Again, a lot of like victim mentality of people saying that they just can't move forward. It's impossible. There's this mental block. I just can't do it, Courtney. I just don't have time. I just can't make that change. Well, a lot of those blocks come from us, and we have the power to actually change that. Most of the problems that I see through my students, again, are particularly just on finding time and staying motivated. If those problems are the problems that we have, and it's not based on, you know, more frustration on not getting a licensing deal, not knowing what to say to a company, but ourselves, that we are the ones that have the problem, these are solvable. This is incredible news because we can control all of these factors. We cannot control if a company is going to like our product. They have their own opinion, but we can control all of the obstacles and blocks that we put in our way, and that these soft skills, benefiting and learning to make sure that we focus on the soft skills than the hard skills, and we can control them. We are cutting out 80% of the problem, and that is amazing, and we can do it. We have to rely on ourselves to do it, but we need to do it. So let's talk about the difference between changing your behavior and changing your identity. When you change one, then the other, it's a little bit like entering a bike race without a bike. You're not going to win. You're going to be running. This is not going to work out too well. Another purple thing here, the things you aren't passionate about are the things that will hinder you from making it in the industry. Do not forget that. These are things you are not passionate about, yet they are controlling the very thing that you are most passionate about and often are your dreams. And yet you're letting things that are you're unpassionate about control that? Like that in and of itself is wild that is the case. And this is what we're working with. This is what we need to change. When I got my very first deal, it took me 82 no's. Can you guys guess, put in the chat, guess how many, at what number did I think, you know what, I kind of want to stop. This is kind of hard. Like I'm getting a lot of no's. I think I want to give up. Mind you, I didn't give up at 82. You know, I got my deal. But guess what number that was coming from me with grit and resilience and so much energy and love for the industry. I see some in here, 10, 25, 5, 6, 7, 50, 60. Okay. So these are actually pretty good. I'm pretty impressed with what you guys put out here. It was number 10. I got 10 no's where I'm like, you know what? I think I'm kind of done. Like, I don't think my product's worth it. I think licensing's not for me. I think I'm going to stop. Like, I think this is just not me. And of course, I had a coach who probably laughed in her head at the time that I was kind of feeling like I was done at 10. And of course, I got some much needed coaching at that moment. And of course, I did not give up. And after 2 years, I got my very first deal, which eventually turned into 4 licensed products at the time. And of course, now I have 6. Okay, so let's go a little bit more into this situation here with redefining our life patterns. This is where a lot of the psychology comes into it. I'm going to go over a couple of these things, and then we're going to move on to a couple other topics. There's a lot of information here, and this stuff is really, really important, because a lot of this at the end of the day is coming from things that we are, the way we grew up, things that we cannot control. And it's who we are, the way that we thought how life worked. And so this is how we operate. But we need to be aware of this so we can understand how we got here. Often when we're young, you know, we have parents, of course, who are teaching us through routines of what to do. We've created holding patterns and structure. Structure is very, very beneficial. It can also be very restrictive. And the older we grow up here, the more that it can become a concern, especially if you're going a more non-traditional route, like if you're getting more into your own job, entrepreneurship, serial inventing, that type of thing, side hustles, lots of passive income things, not a 9-to-5 job, this becomes a problem. Take a look at a couple of these things here. Again, for survival, right out of high school, or if you go to college, right out of college, we need to get a job. We need to make ends meet. Maybe if you went to college, you have debt. Okay. You need to survive. Yep. That's fair. We need to find a way to make money. Very, very true. We need to live. And so we often take a job that we end up staying there with, and we sacrifice our dreams right at the get-go. Like, you know what? I do need to survive. And it's true. We do need to survive. But very often we just take a job to make ends meet. And then that passion, that dream that you had, slowly gets lower and lower in our priorities. And often it never goes back up in that priorities. It kind of just disintegrates and vanishes. This is our dream we're talking about, guys. Like our dream, our passion. Wild, just wild that this starts getting lower and lower because we are surviving, but we never go back into it. So again, recognizing that we have these holding patterns that we prefer comfort. We don't want to disrupt our patterns that we have. They do make us feel safe. And again, that's both a blessing and a curse. It often feels very instinctual. And again, for a form of intuition and survival. And that really gets us in that holding space of not, going after our dreams at all at that point. We do need to create space. And so here's the situation. If you look for space, as my students say, they're constantly trying to find space to go ahead and get in just 3 hours of pitching. That just do your best, just 3 hours of pitching. And they're, okay, I'll do my best to find the space. Instead, let's change our perspective here. Let's start to create the space. If you go out looking for a space, there's a really high percentage that you will not find it. At least in America, I can say that very often we are constantly overworked. We are constantly overwhelmed. We overbusy ourselves. We put our feet in far too many projects. And this is a concern, especially when you're trying to fit something into something that already has no space. And so we need to start creating the space, and we need to utilize tactics and strategies that help us create that space. And we need to make sure that we are putting our dreams in that space at the seat at the table. I did a podcast episode on this called Musical Chairs, and you guys can take a look at that visual on the right to get a feel for what I'm talking about. When we finally have that opportunity to create space, we often fill it up with something else. All right, Courtney, I was finally able to remove something, and now I have an hour, but you know, I've been wanting to paint my house for a while. So I think I'm going to actually put that in. But this is not an automatic conversation that I'm having with my students. This is usually them saying, oh yeah, I had that, but you know, this project was super important, and they filled it in, but it wasn't important when they started inventing. But now that there's a space, they're like, oh, what's the next dopamine hit that I can quickly put in? Well, I haven't wanting to paint my house for 5 years. So bam, it fills it in. Dreams go down the list. And again, we're at the exact same thing. So finally, when you have that opportunity and you are able to create that space, make sure that you don't fill it up with something else. That is prime time. That is really important that you carve that out so you can actually make movement on something that hopefully you are really, really passionate about. At the end of the day, we need to start removing unnecessary activities to make room for significant ones. And just because the fastest activity, the fastest person can get to the chair, like in musical chairs, doesn't mean that that's the activity that actually should be sitting in that chair. That is sometimes a hard distinction to make of speed versus passion. Think about that a little bit when you're playing this musical chairs game, when you're trying to create space here. Time management is really, really important. And so when you're playing musical chairs in real life, of course, there is more people than there are chairs. Our goal is to make sure that we have five chairs and five people. We have five activities and we have five slots that we can put them in. I can almost guarantee that most of you guys are already going to have 10, 15, 20 activities that you're already trying to spend a little bit of time putting in all of those chairs. And at the very beginning, we need to start removing things that we're doing before we can start adding things back in. Okay, and this is where it comes down to mediocrity. How many no's do you have? I want you guys to go ahead and write in the chat. Give me an estimate of how many no's you have on any one of your products. So obviously, let's say those of you who are doing product licensing, you are at the pitching stage. Go ahead and throw a number in of how many no's you believe you have. Of course, for my students, we are very, very careful in how we count no's, and we technically call them true no's for my students. But go ahead and just put in what is your guess of those who saw the sell sheet and said no on your product. They have to have seen the sell sheet there to count it as a no. Awesome, we got 33, 10, got 38, 15, 22, excellent. Okay, so we've got a set of numbers here. This is fantastic. Here's some quotes. So obviously, there's so much out there about rejection. J.K. Rowling, 12 rejections. Henry Ford, Walt Disney went bankrupt multiple times. We're talking bankrupt here. We're not talking about a nose. And of course, the Michael Jordan quote up there. Many, many. You go into all sorts of inventors as well. And it's the number is pretty high up there. It's pretty shocking. And yet they were still vastly successful. And we need to go ahead and change our perspective on this and how success is created. And a lot of it is through experiential knowledge and lots of failures. You have to fail a lot to be able to understand how you can get that success. If better is within your reach and you choose to settle for less, you are settling for mediocrity. I'd really think about this as well. And sadly, a lot of the times that we make change is either because we're so excited about something and we move things around, or so frustrated at something and we move things around. But that hard part is in the middle. If you're not at that 90% or that 10%, if you're somewhere in the middle and you just choose to not reach for higher, you are definitely what I would call sitting in mediocrity. A lot of this does stem from, again, I can only speak for the US, but our Prussian education system that we have here. A lot of people end up being afraid of failure as they grow up because of school. A lot of it comes down to tests. We feel judged. We get humility. And a lot of that comes down to not being able to have the opportunity to correct our own mistakes. And this is where I think a lot of this stems from as we become adults and the decisions that we make and the risks that we are and are not willing to take. How many tests were you allowed to retake in school? A lot of the tests in our education system is you take the test and you move on as a parameter to see who has been successful in taking in, retaining the knowledge, and who has not. But what about all those questions you got wrong? How many tests are you able to retake? How many were they allowing you to retake? Now, how many tests do you think you have taken? Often whatever you got wrong is what you end up living with. And that's not a great mindset to have, especially as an entrepreneur. Very inaccurate to the rest of the world. And at that point, as an adult, why even try? Like, if there's a really good chance that you're going to face judgment, humility, and you feel like you're going to fail, like, why even start going down that road? That does not sound fun to me. I'll raise my hand and be like, that will be a no. I'm going to make a hard pass on that. I don't want judgment. I don't want humility. I don't want to fail 500 times. I think I'm going to pass on that. And this ends up being our mode of life. This is how we start making decisions, is we have this subconsciously in the back of our head. And we don't try. And we end up settling. We end up sitting in mediocrity. Failing fast and often is so incredibly important. And it's just not very mainstream enough to be looked at positively. Though it's the quickest way to success. Yet, it's very hard to do. At the end of the day, I think it's really important to make sure that failure in and of itself is not such a big deal. It's just a part of the process of getting good at something. I learned from my game contest that I did recently that it's really important to try challenges in contests and particularly use deadline-driven opportunities that remove perfection. And I will raise my hand off the top and say that I am a big fan of perfectionism. I have struggled with that for years and years. And because of that, all of this has came out of the importance of making sure that if you use deadlines, it forces you to not be perfect. You have to get something out there. You have to ship the product before the deadline. And that those types of constraints where you're like, you know what? I see an inventor challenge out there. I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to enter it. And worst comes to worst, I don't win anything. And you're going to learn so much from that by just doing something to a deadline. True progress comes from pushing past comfort and mediocrity and trying many times and learning through experiential knowledge. Success comes from learned failures. This is how I like to look at it. Another purple quote here. Failure is the boat that takes you to the success you want. You have to get on that boat. You have to get on that boat of failure. If you want to get across the island to success, you have to be willing to make those sacrifices and get in that boat to get to that success island. At the end of the day, I will say that I was a part of a nonprofit that my parents ran called Learn to Discover. And the most important thing that we taught there through a variety of educational technology-based classes like robotics, animation, video game design, the purpose of creating this nonprofit was to instill passion in wanting to learn and to learn how to learn and to be curious. And by doing that, it's allowed me as well to be very, very endlessly curious about the world, and knowledge is power. I definitely got that from my dad. With that said, it's really important to understand where that mediocrity is coming from. And of course, raise your hand if you feel frustrated with your lack of movement. Just give me a raise of hands here for those of you who are pitching. I see some instant hands. Let me scroll down here. Yep, I see two hands. I see some waves. Perfect. Okay, we'll take it from there. We've got a lot of hands. Ben, you are like going all over the place, waving like a crazy man. I'd say that you're counted in here. Yes, and this happens. This happens very often in our lives on various different projects, you know, not just product licensing here. This is what matters at the end of the day. If you feel frustrated with your lack of movement, a company's not responding, at getting, you know, no's very slowly to the point where you're like, you know, you're starting to give up. Maybe you want to stop pitching. Is it because of your own excuses, your own challenges that you're dealing with in life, and your lack of perseverance, persistence, grit, and discipline? Or is it because you'd really just rather spend your time elsewhere and you just aren't passionate enough about it? And either of those are fair answers. I'd really sit with that and think about what you believe that answer is. Sitting in a limbo and being upset about it, as we talk all the time with my students, is not going to get you anywhere. In fact, it's dangerous. It's very dangerous. It can alienate companies. It can waste people's time. And as well as not just, you know, myself or anyone as a coach, but as well as your families and people in the industry. I think a lot of this also stems from worshiping money and not time. You can get money back. You cannot get time back. Again, survival is a very understandable motivating factor for getting money. We do need money to live, and I'm not going to overshadow that. But we do need to, at some point in our lives, we do need to start reframing that and making sure that time is almost always above money here, especially when you're not in a fight or flight mode in your life trying to make ends meet. Why is success always right on the other side of when you want to give up? Success is earned. And this is a problem here because this is what it always feels like, is that it's always on the opposite side. Right when we want to give up, if we just push a little bit further, very often success is earned right on that other side. But we give up right before. And so I feel like at the end of the day, this is much deeper than a licensing deal. It's a reward for your new identity that you have become and mastered. And delegating is really important as well. Once you go through the process multiple times, you need to answer these questions in this order. Feel free to write this down if this is relevant to you. The first one, this is in order, so make sure you do this top down. Number one, can you delegate it? That's a simple question. Yes, you can delegate it, or no, you can't delegate it. Number two, what do you want to spend your time on? For example, for the most of the time, I enjoy making my own sell sheets. I can do it. I have the skills for it. I often do. There are other times when I can do it, and I can delegate it. And I have other things that I cannot delegate, like pitching. My time is my number one most important value. And so I recognize that and understand it. And so there are times where I'm absolutely paying for my sell sheets to be made, because the very most important thing that I need to be doing is pitching. And that is something that I can't delegate. So therefore, to create space, something has to give. And sometimes that ends up being my sell sheet, or, you know, various other things I am able to delegate. Then, of course, what skills you have and can you afford to, that's definitely something that you do need to think about. The 12-Week Year is an incredible book that I would definitely recommend taking a look at. Feel free to check out that quote, and it talks about accountability. Just because you have interest in something doesn't mean you are committed to it. Very important. I would definitely recommend writing that down. Act on your commitments and not your feelings. It might seem daunting to do some things, but what makes it a commitment is overriding your emotions to keep yourself motivated. Commitment is putting a lot of effort into keeping the promises you made to yourself. It means you prioritize your duties and overcome laziness and reluctance. Definitely continue, and if you haven't yet, then start to ask yourself, what can you delegate right now? A mind stretched by a new experience can never go back to its former dimensions. With that said, we need to start shifting your identity. We often get in a very hyper-focused bubble, especially when we're in that 9-to-5 grind, and based on, now that we understand, potentially our education system, at least in the US. We need to start opening up our eyes to new experiences so we do make sure that the time that we spend on Earth is really valued at the things that we are actually passionate about. Where you spend your time is who you become. You are the byproduct of your situation. We need to start investing in who we want to become and bet on ourselves. We need to bet on ourselves at the beginning, before we have started something, after we have committed to it 100%. So we make sure that we do move forward with it. We should not be investing money or time or energy, any of that, in who we are now, but who we want to be. And now, making a full circle here, back to identity. When people ask what you do, if you could choose to say anything in the world, what would you say? Go ahead and put that down right now in the chat. What do you want your identity to be? Put that in there. And those are some examples up at the top that could be examples of what that could look like, your identity sentence. This was by far my most successful podcast episode, definitely shockingly to me, number 18, why your identity is holding you back. This identity sentence that you have needs to be something that you're very passionate about, that you can see yourself doing for over 2 years. And the most important one, you're willing to make sacrifices to make it. Again, if you wouldn't do something for free that you are being paid for, why do it? Excellent. We've got some good responses in here. Adventurer and inventor. I am a successful inventor. Excellent way you're putting that. I am one. Awesome. Excellent. Anything that you put down here in the chat for what you want your new identity to be, I would definitely go ahead and write that down on your paper as well, so you can compare it to what you originally put at the top. So feel free to take a look. This is where a lot of this stemmed from. There's various pieces that get created through various jobs and different experiences that you have done. An example for me, giving you a case study, when I used to teach at Orange Discover for STEAM classes, I found my love of teaching there. I knew that was something that I ended up being really passionate about. Then I did a lot of baby sign language for about 6 years. I found the importance of making sure that something that you're passionate about, you often don't put in like 3 hours here and 3 hours there, but you actually incorporate it into your life increments by increments. That's how you end up changing your identity, is when you start putting it into your life and not make a special time for it where you need to throw everything to the side and say, okay, this is my time here. I need to, you know, go ahead and just do my best, yet often it's a mountain out of a molehill, you often don't have 3 hours. And so you keep saying, I'm going to find the time to do this, not creating the time. And then you end up not doing it. And then there's some other information as well there of more of this case study that I have there, a Khan Commitment coaching in the particular coaching style that I've created and known to really, really love. And it's the way that I coach Adam Vett, right? And so through that, I've wanted to put a prime on my time in my education. Currently, I am taking 2 game design courses, 2 courses on IP, and then a course on psychology and emotional intelligence. I'm constantly educating myself. This is really, really important to who I want to become for my future self. What do you change first, your behavior or your identity? Why don't you guys go ahead and let me know your thoughts on what that might be, what you think that you are changing first. Is it your behavior or your identity? No, I'm Batman. That's hilarious. Habits and behavior, both identity, behavior, identity. Okay, we've got a lot of things in here. It's quite mixed here. Okay, so let's get into it. This is where the rubber meets the road. You are diligently trying to change your behavior. Every call, you're talking about my students here, you express frustration with yourself. You just can't get yourself to do it. I can't get myself to pitch. I can't do it. Even when I've created the time, I can't do it. I just sit down. I'm like, all right, I've got an hour here. And then you just can't get yourself to start. There's that mental conflict there. It stems from trying to change your behavior before changing your identity. You need to make sure your identity is aligned first and your behavior will follow. You have to change that input first and your behavior will follow. Identity first. And the number one most important thing here, you need to align it with your passions, your goals. Start with changing your identity. Often the resistance feels like instinct and intuition. You will often feel like you're going against yourself because you are. You need to retrain your brain. Just like muscles are torn, you are going to feel a little bit of that pain when you are changing your identity. It's a sacrifice you must make. Once your identity matches your goals, your behavior will actually naturally flow. Again, it's the first thing. The input is number one. What are you taking in? You are a byproduct of everything that you take in. You will stop fighting with yourself when you start with identity first and behavior second. You need to surround yourself with who you want to become, including your job, your community, your free time, your family. You want to put your hours in the places that you want to succeed. Again, input is what matters. Ignore the rest of the formula. You have good input, you will create good outlook. You will create good output, and you will create the future that you want. Align your input with who you want to be, and your behavior will follow. Change your identity. The number one thing, if you guys are going to take anything from this presentation, change your identity and your behavior will follow. We're talking about dreams here, guys. Why do we act like our dream is a dream? Why don't we put the weight and the passion and the love back in the word dream? We're not talking about something that is unattainable. We need to add back in the resilience and passion in the word dream. This is not something that one day, yeah, maybe we'll get to and then we never get to it. We want to get to it. We need to make sure that we end up doing that so we don't feel that regret later. And that often ends up including making sure that we're committing 100% of the time. When we commit 100% of the time, at the end of the day, that means we're making a decision where we are cutting off alternatives. If we make that decision once, we do not need to deal with decision fatigue. And this is where it really comes in. People say they're committed, but they're committed in about 98%. So where does that 2% come in? Is it when you face 50 rejections and feel like giving up? Yeah, that sounds about right. Right when that 2% wants to come in there where willpower and motivation fails and you want to give up? Yep, that's where that's going to happen. But if you are going to commit 100%, you do not have that decision fatigue. If you're deciding what to do, you know what you will end up doing. You will have committed 100%. You will need to commit 100% if you want to make sure that you are accomplishing your dream. Once you commit, hopefully it becomes a passion and then a habit or a lifestyle. And then hopefully, if you want to, a career. Motivation usually comes after you begin. It's the start that stops most people. So make sure you actually start and then let that motivation come in here. And this comes down to, again, the input. You need to consume your passion. Consume, consume, consume. These are some examples of what you can do to consume your passion if your passion is in product licensing, an inventor, a serial inventor, collecting royalties. Here are some examples of what you can do to consume that information. You need to take an information that inspires and agrees with your dream. And there's an example at the bottom of like a restaurant, totally irrelevant from our industry as an example. The dream will start itself if you surround yourself by the identity you want to become. And here's a couple other things that I'll mention for a lot of students who are saying that I don't have time. I would flip that on its head and say that it's not a priority. If you don't have time, it's really not a priority. And that's a really hard conversation that I have with my students. They're like, no, I'm passionate about it. They feel like they have to defend themselves. That, you know, it is a priority. Well, your words are different than your actions. You say, well, you will accomplish it, but months down the line, and you don't end up accomplishing it. So change that. Every time in your life when you're like, I just don't have time for that. Okay, it's not a priority. That's okay. You just need to decide. Is it a priority or is it not? And yeah, if we want to make our dreams a reality, we need to protect the space and time it needs for us to be successful. Where people spend their time says a lot about their priorities. Definitely think about that. How we spend our time is a choice that we're making. And then here's a couple of extra things for those of you who are like, okay, I get this, Courtney. I need to not, you know, sit in mediocrity. I need to find time. Like, I need to do all these things, but okay, I get that. We're past that now. But what do I do? Like, you're talking about like gaining time and removing time. Like, how are we doing this then? What are the tactics that we can use? Definitely, you guys will want to spend a lot of time here, especially in the recording, trying some of these tactics. One of them, which I do probably every quarter, is called the Eisenhower Matrix. And these next three sections here are purely just talking about getting back time, so removing things from your life, gaining more time, and then efficiency. All of this is about solving that problem of I don't have time once your priorities are in line. Yeah, breaking unproductive habits. This is a big one. This is a formula that I have created that I found to be really important, including especially when there isn't just a trigger. A lot of this comes down from at the end of the day when we want to relax. We worked hard during the day and now we go home and we want to wind down. But often what we end up choosing is something that is mindless and something that is not mindful. We need to make sure that the extra time that we do have is truly spent on things that can help you focus on the things that your identity, who you end up actually wanting to become. This is a formula you guys can follow to help make that happen. Okay, and yeah, continuing with getting back time, you need to remove things from your life. There are so many different endless tactics and strategies. Often in my coaching calls, my student will mention a very particular thing. And from my long list of tactics I have, I will then pinpoint the thing of, you know, what they're struggling with and have them try that. And so acknowledging your discontent, question your priorities. Why haven't you prioritized changing what you don't like about yourself? Guys, this is simple. This is very, very simple, but why? Why haven't we prioritized changing the things we don't like about our life? It should start there. And that could very easily start with a list. Why haven't you asked your boss if it's possible to try switching to a different shift? Or why you haven't been able to block off a weekend to try something you are passionate about? Have you truly explored all of those options to make sure that the time that you're spending is truly in something that you enjoy? You have to take action. Trying new routines as well can really, really help, and something that you can do instantly. And yeah, making movement. You do feel mentally exhausted. I get that a lot as well. Well, I'm mentally exhausted. I can't do it. I'm just, my brain is not there. That actually happened to two of my students yesterday, where they're like, you know, I'm just mentally exhausted. I'm doing too much. I just don't have the time. Again, don't have the time. And so mental exhaustion is just another thing to go through. And there are so many tactics on this. Feel free to take a look at these. Breaking your project into a tiny task, starting the day off with what is the most important thing you want to accomplish. Licensing, you do need to make sure that you cannot remove self-care and replace licensing in your list of priorities. Something needs to give, but self-care cannot be that one. embracing radio silence is my number one that I love to do, that can be a little bit hard to find the time, but I forcibly do it. I'm like, I need to absolutely utilize the radio silence tactic. I have an episode on that you guys can check out to get really deep into the psychology of what that is and how that works. And a lot of it just it comes down to literally having a 5-minute timer and sitting in silence and just letting thoughts come to you and leave you. And reading your exhaustion can really help as well, especially when you're working with like family and friends and you're talking with them and you're trying to get things done around the house and being honest with what is your level of exhaustion. There are times when you should push yourself and there are also times when you should not. And so knowing those boundaries and knowing exactly where that gray area is and understanding what that gray area is can really help you make sure that you utilize your time wisely. Gaining back time. These are other tactics that you can use now to gain time. Instead of removing things, now we're adding things using different strategies. Those of you, I'm sure some of you are familiar with the Pomodoro method. Try that if you can't sit for very long. You can do that in segments. You can schedule in venting into your phone. I do that all the time. I set alarms constantly. That's the number one tactic that I recommend for my students is setting alarms to make sure that you do go ahead and add a buffer that in 10 minutes, I need to sit down on my desk and I need to start pitching. Very easy to get lost in life, period. But when you have a loud alarm that's buzzing and you're like, what the heck? Oh, right. I actually need to move forward with my passion. It's hard to ignore that alarm, especially when it's multiple times a week at the time that makes sense for you to start pitching at. And then there's other, you know, things here as well to take a look at, like blocking off a day. I've had students actually use their work vacation to have a staycation and just pitch for the entire week. We're talking 8-10 hours a day using their work vacation to actually sit down and pitch. And Alex Ramosi recommends you utilizing weekends at least one, and this can be hard, but at least one day a week during the weekend to truly go ahead and do a crunch time and try to spend that time pitching. And then cleaning up your act. There's a lot here, but trying to remove everything from your workspace is really, really helpful. Making sure you're using your email successfully. This is a big one. Same with computer. Holy cow, I'd say probably 90% of my students are not using keyboard shortcuts, do not know that you can group tabs, are not utilizing a mouse, do not know what a favorites bar is or how to use it. Making sure your scripts are accessible, using copy and paste, adding extensions in so you don't actually lose them, your tabs. There's a lot of things there. We're talking hours and hours. You're getting back in your time if you spend time gaining skills for you to be successful. We're talking hours, guys. These hours could be the difference of getting a deal and not even choosing to start. This is a really big difference that you can make just by making sure that you are efficient with your skills and with utilizing, you know, your workspace successfully here. There's a whole other thing we won't get into, but that, you know, goes into mental clutter. And this is really, really important and took a long time for me to get good at. And there's a little formula you guys can take a look at as well. Last couple things here, long-term goals versus short-term goals. What's really important is once you commit to 100%, that you do go ahead and make sure that you have it be a long-term goal. Thinking short makes you short-sighted, and that's not good for the licensing industry, especially for product licensing. You really do need to make sure that you do have those long-term goals and you're thinking long-term so you can make sure that you balance your life out properly for that. You can try something that you do not like. So feel free to try different things. And if you don't like it, give yourself permission to bow out and to move on. Just because you've tried it doesn't mean you have to continue it. So recognizing what you do or do not enjoy and making sure you're making that long-term decision on that particular activity is really important. And then hard skills versus soft skills. This could be, you know, hour long conversations. And maybe this is something that we could do a future presentation on if it's relevant to anyone. But really focusing on those soft skills than those hard skills is really, really important. I would say in my mind, if I'm choosing hard skills, meaning a good product, a good sell sheet, a good industry to pitch in compared to soft skills, building a relationship, making sure you have proper time management, the intangible things, I will bet my money, my time, my energy, my effort, everything on someone who has good soft skills and a bad product than someone who has a brilliant product and really, really bad soft skills. If you don't follow up, there's a really low chance that you're going to get a deal. And just that in and of itself is a soft skill. And not following up is the number one reason, in my opinion, why inventors don't get licensing deals. They give up. And this is an example of a comic that I made to prove that point after many aggravations from my students telling them, like, it rarely has anything to do with you, like, being ghosted. Like, usually they just forget. And so you need to follow up to remind them that you did send that email and you are looking for a response back. With that said, there's a couple other things here you guys can feel free to take a look at the recording. The one thing that I'll mention here that isn't in here, and that is this pot story that I have. Essentially, the story is this. We have a class who are making various pots. It's a ceramics class. And the teacher has group A make tons of different pots. Your goal is to make hundreds and hundreds of pots and create the perfect one. Whichever is your perfect one, you're going to send that in for the assignment. And then we have a person, group B, who is you're going to perfect one pot. That's all you're going to do. You're going to have one pot and you're going to make that perfect pot and you're going to send that in. The number one group that ends up having much, much more success in a really good pot is the one that ends up doing tons and tons of pots, not perfecting one pot, is outputting hundreds of pots and taking that one pot that is really good and sending that in. It's a stark difference if you look at the study of how those pots look, which is proving that experiential knowledge is really, really important. You can't get too focused in on, at the end of the day, planning and knowledge. You need to turn that knowledge into wisdom and you need to act. You need to repeatedly act again and again and again. You don't know how cold that water is until you step into it. And so it's really, really important to go ahead and step into it and either A, go ahead and make many, many, many different failures and hopefully successes to get there, or work with someone who does have that industry knowledge, who has failed many times, to help you lily pad hop over a couple of those mistakes that are really easy to make when you just have the knowledge and not the wisdom. One more thing here I'll bring up, which is just this waterfall analogy that those of you are familiar with. If you were in my smart pitch meeting at InventRite that I did recently. That's just this waterfall analogy of when you're pitching, when you're it's like you're pushing water to start the flow of a waterfall. Excellent. You're pitching. Awesome. When you stop pitching, when you stop moving your hands to dump the water off, at the end of the day, there will be some responses back. It'll trickle in, but then it will completely stop. This does come down to actual physics here. The longer you wait, the longer you will not get a response back. So if you stop pitching, there's a good chance that you are not going to continue to get responses back, no matter how many responses that you put. You know, I pitched to 50 companies and, you know, I'm just going to wait for a week. And then 2 weeks and 3 weeks. Well, if you're not continuing to make momentum, then you're not going to get very many responses back. And so for any of you, those who like this type of information, who are interested in observational psychology, organizational psychology, Khan Academy coaching, and learning more about where this knowledge is coming from, essentialism, definitely recommend taking a look at these books. They're also on my website. I'm a big fan of these books. I have read all of them. I do not recommend a book that I have not read. A lot of this has stemmed from this knowledge from this podcast, from this webinar. There's so much information in here. And so I do recommend slowly diving in bit by bit and utilizing these tactics. If you guys are struggling with pitching and you are fed up and you're frustrated, I have a three-part series on my podcast that really goes into reframing the way that you look at pitching to make sure that you understand where that frustration is coming from. And those of you who do not have a coach and are interested in maybe considering getting a coach and you're curious of how the heck do I coach? What type of coaching do I do with InventRite? I go over that in my 50th episode called Concomitant Coaching. And so you guys can take a look at that to get familiar with what that style is. And last but not least, I'll mention that if any of you guys are interested in future presentations, these are maybe some topics that might be of interest to those of you. If you are interested in this A or B of these, feel free to put in the chat, like, write the letter A or write the letter B, and we can take a look at those and see if it might be relevant for us to go ahead and in the future maybe do some videos or maybe another webinar on one of these, A, why you don't have a licensing deal yet, and B, the soft skills of success. Thank you guys so much for coming. I know this was really quick here, and we went a little bit over time here, and we'll of course jump into some breakout rooms. But once again, the most important thing for you guys to take in at the end of the day, in my opinion, is you really need to align your input with who you want to be. Change your identity first, and your behavior will follow. If you haven't started yet, it's the hardest thing to do. And the first thing that you can do is start by gaining information in the industry or area that you're passionate about.
Courtney, I think I speak for all of us when I say that was absolutely phenomenal. Someone commented you made them uncomfortable and they thanked you for that. I would have to agree. You're giving us the real talk. You're being honest. I think something we don't acknowledge is that this requires hard work. It's hard work to change. It's hard work to become the person you want to become. You're right. Success is earned. So everyone, if we could give just maybe a round of applause for Courtney. I know we're virtual here, but she's going to see your faces on the screen. And thank you everyone for writing in as well. Truly remarkable. I've got some chills. One of my favorite ideas, kind of quotes, there's no transformation without collapse. Something's got to give to become something else. And that can feel scary, but it doesn't have to. That can be really beautiful too. And now that we've heard more than enough from me, I'm so sorry, Ben, I didn't acknowledge you earlier. We've got the one and only Ben Harrison here with us, the creator of Smart Pitch, our fearless leader and host. He is going to help us get into some breakout rooms so we can continue the conversation. Ben, take it from here.
Yeah, I don't know how you guys wanna do it. I didn't know that we were gonna already be at like 10 past. We have a couple of questions that I think would be really good to get to. If anybody has an idea for a breakout room that they would like to break out and hear about, we can get into that. If not, if you just want to give us whatever questions you have, we can hang around a little bit and get those answered for you. There was one question while you're entering that into the chat that I would like to ask for Courtney. That was, let's say you finally found a company that you would like to license your patent to. How exactly do you bring it up? Do you just say, by the way, if you're looking to license my patent, let's talk numbers, shall we? So they're asking how you would broach reaching out to a company that you wanted to try to license your intellectual property to, how you would initially bring that up. It's a bit of a long answer, I would assume to that question, but feel free to take that.
Yeah, that's a massive topic, which is why it's an entire step, Adam Bent, right? Step eight. It's hours worth of education there. Just from the get-go, let's just assume that you did your market research, you have a virtual prototype, and you have a sell sheet, you have potentially a provisional patent application, and you're ready to pitch. You definitely need to create a good hit list, and that's where that pitching starts. And there's many, many, many ways to find companies. One way to give you to answer that question a little bit is by going to a store that you think should have your product. So if it's a hardware item, go to Home Depot online. Go to the category that you think your product should be in. Look at the brands. There's a brand section. Look up those brands. Let's say it's Irwin. Great. Irwin is a brand that's going to be on Home Depot. Use Irwin. Go to the irwin.com website. Make sure that your product fits in. And I would go ahead and start with, preferably, if you can reach out to sales and marketing emails, great. But often you can't. Sometimes you just have a support email. So there's many different tactics, and we won't have time to go deep into any of these tactics because there's so many different ones, but one of them is you could ask, "Has they ever worked with outside product ideas before?" Hello, I'm a professional product developer, and I have a product that I think would fit in very well with your product line. Who would be the right person to talk to about outside product ideas? Thanks. Very simple. You can also bypass customer service by just saying, "Hi, I have a question for the sales department," and hope that they direct you to sales or marketing. And a lot of the hardware companies, as an example, have portals. And so definitely check that as well and see if any of those companies have a submission portal. Potentially start there if the submission agreement looks fine, and then go ahead and try to find other ways to get in, such as other forms of email or LinkedIn.
So if I can add something to that, Courtney, great, great answer. Jose, I would say my personal recommendation, I'm not a lawyer. This isn't financial, legal advice, anything of the sort. But my personal recommendation would not be to come at somebody and say, hey, let's talk numbers, shall we? That's not going to be the best way to start to build a professional relationship with somebody if you're looking to get your intellectual property license. If you've found companies that you think would be a really good fit, you've done your research, a really good way to open up that conversation is just to ask them if they take product develop or ideas from outside product developers, if they are open to open innovation. And if they are open to that, then hopefully they have a process. You can ask them about that and they can start to help walk you through that. But getting started off in anything, just trying to get exactly to the numbers or brass tacks, it isn't going to come across all that great. And it's better to make sure the people are open to doing that in the first place, and then ask them a little bit about their process and see how you can be a team player and make sure that you have all the key elements in place in order to send over to them, like really great marketing material that makes sense, and that you have everything in place in order to make their job easy to say yes to you, and to not worry so much about just the numbers, but finding a partner that's going to be somebody that you're going to want to work with and that can take your product and get it into a bunch of stores. So maybe just change your perspective just a little bit and think of like how you would want somebody to start a relationship with you and kind of ease into it before you go right for the kill and start talking numbers. Courtney, there was another question I saw somewhere in here. Madeline, let me know if William says he has hard time eliminating ideas, marginal ideas. Work very hard on eliminating marginal ideas. Do you have any advice on that for people, Courtney, on how they can maybe pick the right projects? No doubt you see a ton of different projects come across your desk from students. How do you cull through that list?
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to that market research. Again, because I'm so I'm so data and analytics driven, I take myself out of the equation. But I will say that that's because I've pitched hundreds of my own products. And so I don't have the, my product is my baby perspective. And so this can be a little bit hard to do, but now when I myself go through product ideas, deciding which one to put energy on, I take myself completely out of the equation. I do not focus on like what I'm passionate about. So that can play a role in for getting motivated and having that willpower and gaining that discipline. Sometimes having sheer passion can play a role in it. It just does not for me. I just go about it a little bit differently, but make sure you have some passion in it that you believe can be sustaining. Otherwise, if you completely lose passion for it, there's a good chance that you'll just give up and stop pitching it. Elsewise, I am definitely looking at the market, and often I start with the hit list. This is a little bit more of an advanced tactic that you got to be a little bit careful with, and I wouldn't recommend it to everyone, but myself, I do start with seeing how big the industry is, like what the category is. Baby is a big category, toy and game is a big category, hardware is a big category, housewares and kitchenwares, gift, novelty. If you go into any of those areas, boom, there's going to be a lot of companies in that already. Something small, something without electronics, something that's lightweight, something that shipping can be pretty easy. At the end of the day, those are like the biggest parameters. Obviously, it really does come down to the actual specific product. And so, of course, when I'm doing product evaluations with my students, we go pretty hard into going through those categories and different, you know, ways that it can be done. But those are at least some parameters for you to start with. And then you really need to know the industry. So it's important to do your your market research and start with, of course, first seeing if your product is out there. If there's something close to it out there, that is a good thing. You do want to see something that is close to it out there. It shows proof of demand. If there's nothing like it out there at all, that means that it might be hard to bring it to market because it might need some education involved in it to make sure that the company understands what the benefit is to the consumer. So I'd look at it that way as well.
Wow, that's a great answer. Thank you so much, Courtney. So I've seen some comments, Madeline, people saying that we should just, you know, not worry about having any kind of breakout room, getting into all that. And we should just have a little bit of an open session for a second. And that works for me.
Yeah, that absolutely works for me. I just looked through the chat and I'm going to pull out one more kind of question comment before people have the opportunity to write in others. Kevin wrote, the frustrating part for me is the no response. So I'm wondering if I'm knocking on the right doors or trying to access the company in the most efficient way. This definitely seems like a main pain point for people. And, you know, I'm not pitching ideas for licensing, but I'm pitching other things. And, you know, you spend hours writing these messages, you reach out, you do your research, you get excited, and then just nothing, you know? And so it can feel like that time was for naught. So how would you go about answering that, Courtney, for someone who's getting a no response at all and is really questioning, am I doing something wrong? What can I do differently?
Yeah, and this could go in so many directions. And of course, I'll just focus on talking about product licensing and getting in there. You definitely need to start with the hit list. At the end of the day, I've been doing actually a lot of A/B testing myself on the hit list and how the hit list is derived through different methods, and then doing A/B testing on the scripts. And then I just finished my A/B testing for going through what titles of people that I should be reaching out for. Again, data driven. And so because of all of that, it could be a bunch of things. Your hit list may not be very good. It could be the wrong people that you're reaching out to. And most importantly, in my opinion, it really does come down to the script. The script is the most, in my opinion, difficult yet psychologically strategic. In my mind, with my own experience, it really, really comes down to the script. And you do want to make sure that you're putting the relationship first, then what you're actually looking to accomplish here with product licensing. And so without, you know, knowing what the situation is, yes, being ghosted and not getting responses is common in and of itself. Even if you have a really good hit list, really good scripts, and the right titles, you will be ghosted. Which is why I got so frustrated, which is why I created the 3-part series on my podcast for this. Do you have the ghosting blues? Because lately, for the past probably 2 or 3 months, I've had far more of my students than usual be very frustrated, where they're like, I just can't get any responses. I reached out to 20 companies, like I am doing my follow-ups, and yet I'm done. I'm so tired of this. And so I've heard enough of that where I'm like, okay, this is a bigger discussion. This really needs to be talked about. Perspective shift, what is happening, what we can do about it, what we can do about it. We can't be waiting. That's the number one thing we can't be doing. We do need to do follow-ups. And so one, you know, I kind of hate to say this, but really getting into the nitty-gritty of what the heck you're doing, what your hit list is, what your scripts are, what your project is. A coach can help. A coach is really important for that, or someone who can walk you through it, who knows what's going on. If you're an veterinary student, you're going through the 10 steps, like you're just tired of it, take a look at my podcast and look at those 3 different episodes and see if that helps in any way with just your perspective of being frustrated that they aren't getting back and what you can do about that.
I wouldn't even say it's common would be the best way to frame being ghosted. I would say expected. Like if you're expecting anything but that, you're going to be very, very disappointed early and often. Just go into it knowing that that's going to happen. Know that everybody else, all the other faces that you see on the screen right now, have all been ghosted to. We've all been had people say no to us. Everybody goes through it. So managing your expectations, I think, is really important too. And for me, you're talking about identity and behavior. And part of my identity is bad behavior. So I have a hard time with all of this, Courtney. I have to adjust to some good behavior and get a better identity all at the same time. But what I really want to encourage everybody in is we all know what it's like to be ghosted. We all know how bad that feels. And if you've tried reaching out at all to anyone ever, you've experienced that. What I want to make sure that everybody, the point that you get to, is I want to make sure that you get to experience what it feels like whenever it works and what it feels like whenever you send your idea over to somebody and they like it. Because all the bad things that happen, all the frustration, all the ghosting, everything in that moment, it doesn't matter anymore. You forget all of that because of the good things that happen. So changing your behavior, changing your identity, it takes time. And it takes getting to the wins, even if they're small. It takes doing the work to get to the point to where you do get those wins, to give you the motivation and to help you to see yourself different too. And once you start to pile those little wins up, once you start to see yourself as that other person, I think is beautifully put and a wonderful message, Courtney, that you change who you are as a person at that point. And I really want to encourage everybody that it doesn't take a house, you know, on the coast to be success. You know, success can be getting your idea out there. It can be taking action, and you pile up enough of those little successes, and then sooner or later you've built the life that you want on your terms. And I want to encourage everybody that can start with one win. So just go out and get that one little win and start to see yourself different. Sorry, I'm go off on my soapbox rambles, and I probably have missed a question or two. Madeline, do you have anything else that you saw?
I will just take the opportunity to share that, yes, these videos are actually on the web. They are not only on the Inventors Groups of America YouTube channel, which I will link shortly, but we also publish them on the InventRight TV channel. So if you would like to watch the recording, that's what I'm assuming this question was about. If I misinterpret it, please let me know. Courtney has made her podcast widely accessible as well. I believe you can check out her website where she has it linked. And I'm imagining you can also find it on anywhere you listen to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. If you're not following Courtney on LinkedIn, I certainly would. She posts about every episode, giving you a taste and an insight with usually some unique and interesting graphics to let you know what's coming. So if you're not, you know, sure you necessarily want to watch every, listen to everyone, you can get a little preview and check it out that way. I actually don't know, Jose, what the company America Invents is. So, and I try to think I know most of the other organizations. So this organization is called right now Inventors Groups of America. That name actually might be changing soon, but I cannot answer your question any more than that, unfortunately. Ben, Courtney, are you familiar with America Invents or even, yeah?
Yeah, I'm familiar a little bit, but not enough to speak on it.
Got it. Yeah. Oh, okay. Bill Sedell. I listened to his, he gave a presentation today to the USPTO. Were any of you in attendance for that about successful inventing? It was a conversation all about licensing that took place at 11 a.m. Pacific this morning. Yeah.
It's awesome. And Elliot, I want to thank you too for bringing this up. And Malin, Courtney, either one of you that want to speak to it. It's not something that we've really talked much about tonight. I don't want to keep everybody long either. But Elliot brought up how important building relationships is, and I know, Madeline, you're all over the world doing all kinds of stuff, been, you know, writing and speaking, and Courtney, you're all over the place having people on your, you know, you have your own podcast, you do all kinds of stuff too. And so I just want to ask the both of you how important you think relationships are in the business that you do, and how like what if there's any one soft skill that you've cultivated that you think makes it easy for you to quickly build relationships and get people to trust you enough to be willing to even respond. Madeline?
Yeah, good question. I love this question, actually, and I'll answer it in a specific way. For those of you who don't know, I've been heavily involved in helping manage Stephen Key, my dad's social media presence, since basically 2014 on LinkedIn. And he's, you know, a prolific guy. He puts himself out there. He makes a ton of videos. We've written articles together. You know, we really want people to get to know him. But I think sometimes people look at the social media and they see the comments or the likes, and they think like they don't really understand that most of the people that are commenting or liking, those aren't random people. Those are people he's interacted with. Those are people he's called on the phone. Those are people he's messaged. Those are people he's mentored. There's no amount of thinking you can kind of, in my opinion, just put yourself out there and people will connect with you. Those are people he's built relationships with. And that's why I hope some of you would feel like you're a fan, because you feel like you've gotten to know him. And so I think relationship building on some level is letting people get to know you. And I don't think I'm actually that good at it. You know, I do social media, but I don't like to share a lot of personal information. It's uncomfortable for me to share photos of myself. You know, that's probably holding me back from getting to know more people. One thing I will say is I've tried to bridge this gap where all my work is online. I rarely meet people in person. So these days, whenever I do, I really try to soak that up, and I try to give people my attention and genuinely be interested in them. And I also try to bridge the gap when someone I'm seeing do something interesting or cool online, or maybe they're kind to me or they're interacting with me. I try to get that person on the phone or on Zoom and say, like, who are you? And it's not because I think that they can do something for me. It's because I'm curious and I want to learn. And I'm there's so many people who do so many unique things here that I think Courtney's right. Like, when we're not curious, we've really lost our footing there. And so, you know, sometimes relationship building can feel a little transactional, but I think from a long-term perspective, it's finding people who you want to rock with and who you want to cheer on. And so something I try to do on social media is be very generous with my encouragement. I think it takes guts to post anything publicly, let alone something that's intimate, that's a failure. And so it's very easy for me to say, good job. I like what I'm hearing, you know, more of it. And I'll never forget this. I was at a conference with mostly patent attorneys, and I was actually trying to do a little social media for maybe this industry. And I just realized how unique and special what we've built in the product development inventing community is, because one of the patent attorneys, who's a great, nice guy, was like, oh, I don't really like people's posts because I don't want to clog up other people's feed. He perceived liking something as taking away for some other people. And that was such a weird scarcity mindset to me. I couldn't believe it. And then I helped some attorneys make kind of a, like, there was a person who won this amazing award, and I helped them write up this post and make it. And it was like crickets. You know, there was no, the congrats weren't flowing in. And so I think something that's so beautiful about creative people who are really, like, we all know how much work it takes and how much, like, doubt and fear there is, they're really willing to support each other. And I would say, like, that's an easy way to build a relationship. Be generous, be curious. I think people, we're all kind of like hiding sometimes, not wanting to share. So I don't know if there's anything useful in that, but I think it's the most important thing you could do. And yeah,
I think it's a great answer. And from just real quick and Sorry, Courtney. I'm really curious to hear what you have to say about this too, but from your perspective, as someone who has run social media campaign or social media account for someone who has people reach out to them all the time, you've been doing it 10 years now, you said, since 2014. It's 10 years. How, first off, is there any one pitch that you guys have got from somebody, or any one initial message that you've got from somebody that has stood out? And how much do you appreciate and notice when people engage with the content that you post?
Oh, man.
Real quick, just so everybody can hear it from your perspective, because we're not all social media managers.
No, the love I feel for people who have regularly interacted with us and been supportive is runs really deep. I know the names. If those people wrote me an email, if they asked me for anything, I would basically be like, yes, what can I do? How can I help you? Thank you, because we are really nothing. Like, there is no social media without people who support you. It just like doesn't exist. There's some I love this question too, because I don't read all the messages anymore. I haven't for a while, but there was a long period where I did. So I got to see a lot of outreach from other people. And in some ways, it's simple. If you have a short message, if you are kind, if you are respectful, and if you demonstrate some degree of specificity, if you show me in one sentence or one line that you have not just taken like a cursory look and are messaging 25 people for help, but you actually appreciate what we've done because you read something or you listen to something and you tell us how it helped you, that is like gold. That is why we're doing all of this. And so, that helps us be curious. So some people are really cute and they reach out at the very end and they're like, hey, I licensed something, thank you so much. And that's great. But even those small wins, like we're in the business of basically what Courtney is trying us to do, which is link action with intention. We want to get here. We know the action piece is there. And so, yeah, you get a sense really quick if people are going to take, if they want to take a lot from you, and I think relation building is about reciprocity. So you're always wanting to like give before you can ask, So when you write that message with something that you've taken the time, you've taken your time and now you're giving that positivity, people generally want to reply to that. And that's something I forget when I'm reaching out because I'm like, okay, this is what I need. This is what I want. How can I get it? And that's a transactional mindset. That's fundamentally different.
You're so right. And I everyone, I want you to pay attention to what Madeline just said, and remember that whenever you're trying to build relationships. That's what we're talking about, building relationships, how important that is. You just had someone who has run social media for someone for a decade tell you they have a deep love and affection and remember the names of and will respond to the emails of people who have paid it forward. Not an expectation of something. Not in a I scratched your back, you scratch mine mentality. But the people that truly pay it forward, you want to know how to build a relationship. That's a great place to start. Cost you $0 and 0 cents. Not always going to work, but totally worth a shot. Worst case scenario, other people see you out there being positive. And that's not a bad way to be seen as a professional. Sorry, Courtney, you've been so patient. But do you have anything to say about relationships, and your style of that, and anything else to add?
I think this is an incredible discussion, one that we should be having a lot, especially as inventors, because that's what we're doing. We're using our creativity to help someone else be successful. That is what we're doing. Like, we are, yes, trying to get our product on the market, but through that, the only way for that to be successful is to make sure that that company is making money off of our creativity. And so this is an incredible, like, it's definitely the most important. I would agree with you, Maddie. That's the number one most important thing that we're doing is we are building relationships, and we need to make sure that that does happen. And that's at the forefront. And in a way, we're kind of, again, with the psychology of script writing, it's important to make it clear that at the end of the day, we are truly trying to see how we can help them be successful. And so we're asking, like, what can we do for you? And so through the way that we script write, we're trying to help them first. We get a small percentage of their earnings. They're making most of the percentage, and it costs us very, very little besides our time to be able to present something to them. And so that's, it's a cool conversation, because at the end of the day, yes, it's very important. And also we're asking in a way what we can do for them by offering something where we're helping them be successful. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And by us helping them, we also get a little percentage of the pie for our efforts of that royalty percent.
I just want to jump in there real quick. I love that perspective. I recently heard Keanu say it like that. I asked him, how do you think of yourself? Are you an inventor? Are you a designer? You know, he says, these days, I'm trying to do is help companies be more successful. I'm trying to find companies that want to work with me that are open to that. And that's what I'm trying to do. And so to hear that exactly from you, you know, like a couple of days later is just really interesting to me. I don't think that's necessarily always the mindset, and not necessarily one we've even kind of shared from InventWrite or Inventors Groups of America either. It's like, I'm finding a good home. Okay, that's still very self-centered, you know, that's all about me. Where can this go? That's very different from, where are some open-minded, cool people that want to work with creative people like me? And how can I get to know them? And how can I like serve them? That someone described themselves as a servant earlier, which I also really liked, because I think that's a beautiful perspective to be like, to know that you're serving other people. So Ben, chime in, please, because I hope you got to say that.
Well, so this is my perspective on business in general. I've been an entrepreneur my whole life, and something that that's rang true the entire time is that people do business with people that they want to do business with. May not always be the cheapest, may not always be the most popular, may not all whatever, but you end up doing business with people that you want to do business with. And so if you can be that person, be a team player, like what Keanu's saying, go at it, come at things from an angle of, how can I bring value to you? That's what I want to do. I want to bring you value to where you're able to make more money, rather than what can everybody else do for me? I think that mentality is going to serve you much, 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 much better. Is be the type of person that you would want to work with. Learn your industry. Pay it forward. Be seen as a professional in that space. And find like-minded people that you want to work with. And don't look at everything as such a big deal, failure, this, like Courtney's saying. Man, it doesn't matter. Just get out there. Get your beautiful creativity that only you have, your unique creativity that you have. Get that out there and find people that appreciate it, because you try hard enough and you are going to find places that fits in with. And whenever you find those right fits, it can change your life. So we're 5:40. We've gone way over, everybody. Thank you so much for hanging in with us. Courtney, thank you for your wonderful, wonderful presentation that you had. That was so much information. Everybody's going to have to go back and look at the screen recordings just to be able to even begin to digest that. Madeline, I took a couple of screenshots earlier whenever we had a little bigger crowd, but if everybody wants to now, you can even do a little smile and a wave, and we can get a
so nice. I would love that. I just finally
hey, big smile gallery view.
So nice to see your faces. Thank you, everyone.
Yeah.
Very nice. This is such a great group of people.
It truly is. Thank you, everybody. Good to see you, Elliot. Elliot asked me if I'm working after dinner. I'll maybe get in a call. Elliot also asked in a private message if we were cooking via a cauldron earlier.
Like, that's a little cauldron-like. Before we wrap up, just one second. We really want this platform to be useful to you. Please, at any point in time, we welcome your feedback. We welcome your requests for topics and speakers. And, you know, we're planning on it, beginning to invest some more time in this platform, because we think it's really unique that we're actually able to gather. And we see an opportunity for people wanting to do that more, maybe not having that community and IRL and in physical space and being able to tap into it here. So yeah, we have a next meeting at the end of July. I'll be planning on interviewing an AI entrepreneur inventor who is all about how you can use AI to supercharge your inventing and development efforts. I would love to hear questions in advance and during. And just to wrap it up, thank you, Courtney and Ben. This was really spectacular, and I'm glad to be here. Thank you all.
Thanks for having us. Courtney, you're amazing.
Thank you, guys. Awesome to be here. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.